This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herney deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Stay, a 1960 single by South Carolina's own Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, a prime of example of a mostly forgotten subgenre that was known as beach music. Send that out to the Grizzlies, dual citizens of South Carolina, Ja Morant and Gigi Jackson, who played their fifth game ever together last night and their best game ever together so far.
I want to talk about that in a moment. Before we get to that, reading yesterday, listening to podcasts, whatever you did, do you have any further thoughts or theories on the Luka trade?
I wonder about the ownership change part of it. And people have talked about that in the context of, like, you know, do they not want to pay the supermax or whatever? I saw another theory by a smart person I follow on social media, a smart fan, who pointed out that it felt like, you know, that the ownership change aspect of it was you had an ownership group that sort of coddled their superstar and were protective of their superstar and coddled their superstar. And then you have this ownership change and new people come in and things that the previous ownership was letting go, ownership management was letting go, that they get annoyed by, and there's not the dedication to that in relationship with that and that sort of the seed of it. I could see that a little bit, right?
Jeffrey just came up with a whole, said it was a whole.
Yeah, I heard that coming in. My brother and his girlfriend presented that to me is over the weekend. I don't know what day it is. Sunday, maybe. They presented that theory to me. They had encountered it, and I was dismissive of it for basically the same reason, ultimate reason that you were. I'm skeptical of the idea that the ownership would be looking in that direction. I am more skeptical of the idea that the NBA would entertain the idea of allowing them a team to move out of Dallas after what happened with Seattle.
I did in terms of thinking about the secrecy, the ESPN, you know, how this trade happened piece, did actually make some sense to me that they kept it secret because the backlash in Dallas would have been considerable, and it might have gotten mucked up by agents
I think the second part in particular, that if the agent knows what's coming, the agent's going to try to steer it in the direction the agent wants it to go, right? And right. And I think that, you know, the first instinct a lot of people had was, oh, Luka was trying to get out of Dallas, Luka was trying to get to L.A. That seems to not have been the case. And probably the main reason to believe that was not the case even before the reporting was the realization that going to Los Angeles cost them $50 million just in terms of raw contract, much less real money, and that the agent would be like, no, whoa, we want the $350 million. We don't want – that's what we want. And now he's not going to get it.
And so the agent could have – it's funny. You can't imagine the agent – steering it anywhere necessarily other – if you were leaving Dallas and therefore sacrificing the $50 million, you'd probably want to go to L.A., but would they have been able to kibosh it completely?
Yeah, they could, anyway, they could have gotten Nico Harrison fired instead, you know? I mean, that's what could have happened.
Nico Harrison fired instead. All right, you wrote about – it was interesting because there were two pairings last night that were of great interest, one of which you wrote about and one of which Drew wrote about. Each touched on the other as well. Drew wrote about the Ja-Jaren pairing, which we'll get to in a minute. You wrote about the Ja-Gigi pairing. And by the way, this comes – there is an avid listener out there, Chris, who tweeted me originally saying, I hope now Chris gives Gigi Jackson some credit.
Yeah,
he was really anxious for you to hear what you have to say about Gigi Jackson.
I mean, with all due respect to that one person, and I value all listeners, all readers, whatever. It's just one person. I don't think we need to like dedicate our time to responding to one random person on the internet.
No, you do have a degree of patience with Gigi. I think that is honestly appropriate. Like we don't expect them to step in and be a.
Here's an interesting thing about Gigi Jackson, and I alluded to this in my column. I didn't use the quote honestly in part because it was almost like 1 a.m. by that point, and it was long enough, and I wanted to be finished. But Gigi Jackson needs to get better on defense, which Taylor Jenkins talks about. If you look at the numbers, and you know it's only 8 games, but it's up to 8 games now at like something like 20 minutes a game, so it's not a minuscule sample. The Grizzlies' defensive performance with Gigi Jackson on the court is the worst on the team, and it's not remotely close. Like, it's way worse than, like, the J-Huff minutes or the Luke Kennard minutes, which are also not good. There's maybe some noise in that, but also, like, Gigi Jackson hasn't been good on defense, even though he blocked Giannis. The coaching staff knows this. Taylor Jenkins talks about it all the time whenever Gigi Jackson comes up. And the key here is that Gigi Jackson knows. And not only does Gigi Jackson know, He, if you talk to him, as I did and other people did in the locker room after the game, he doesn't just say, I need to get better on defense. He talks specifically about subtle things he needs to improve at on defense. He's much more level-headed about his own game and where he's at and where he's headed than his most ardent fans are. And this is just the thing with player fans. We've seen this before with other players and other eras of the team. You get dedicated to an individual player and you get hyper-focused on when they do something good, it's super meaningful. And when they don't do something good, it's meaningless, right? And it's kind of a tired way to sort of look at things. Like, all players are imperfect. All players are evolving and growing, and especially a dude who like just turned 20. But he had a great game.
I thought it was interesting. You pointed out that he is younger than both the rookies.
Well, he pointed that out. I mean, he brought that up. He was like, he said something like, you know, like when I asked Jalen to do something, he'll look at me like, come on, you know, basically implying that, you know, come on, I'm older than you. And Gigi said, don't do me like that. I'm the second year guy. You know, I'm not the rookie. And so there's a little bit of that. Like he was the youngest guy in the league last season. He's still the youngest guy on this team, like by multiple years, I think. And he's young he's also young in basketball.
Yeah. What by the way, and maybe this is what you need to get into, what among the things, like, what is he bad at? What does he need to get, what does he acknowledge himself that he needs to get better at?
Well, the quote last night I didn't use, I think he specifically said, was he said he needs to do a better job of recognizing when a guy's going to pass. And what he was saying basically was, you know, the ball will move to a player and he will basically leave his man he'll run out to close out on the guy, to go defend the guy, not recognizing that as soon as he heads toward the player, that player's already passing the ball in the direction Gigi's running from, right, to create open shots, and that he just sort of gets lost in the middle of it and stuck in no man's land, and the team defense breaks down. I'm paraphrasing, but he's talking specifically about the, like, you know, I'm closing out hard on a guy just as he's passing the ball in the direction I'm coming from, and that he needs to get better at recognizing that kind of stuff. It's the kind of thing where, like, he'll get blocks and steals. He had 3 last night, but in it's not like Gigi's the only player in the world who's like this. There are many, but he's young. And the cool thing about him is that he has the physical ability to get way better and to be a positive defender, not a negative defender in time. But there's team defense, team situational awareness kind of stuff that happens, and that's why he has been a drag on the defense overall, less so last night, I think. But, like, that's not surprising. Like, and it's something he and the coaches are working on to get better.
You wrote about the two South Carolina players, Ja and Gigi. And this is their – How many games have they now played together? And I think you had never before collaborated even on a single assist between them.
That's not what I wrote. That was the fifth game they'd played ever last night. In the previous four games, there had been two instances of a connection between the two for a basket. Both of those, incidentally, were Ja Morant, you know, simple passes for G.G. Jackson threes. That was the only two. So Ja had never assisted on a G.G. Jackson basket that wasn't just a three. So it was the first time Ja had thrown a lob to G.G. for a basket. It was the first time he'd set him up for a dunk last night. It was the first time G.G. Jackson had ever set up Ja Morant for an assist. And so the total number of connections tripled last night. It went from 2 to 6 in one night.
And what else did you see from Gigi last night? Obviously, the box score, 27 points, 11 of 20, 4 of 9 from 3.
Yeah, I mean, he was making shots. And that's going to come and go with most players, if you're lucky enough to be able to make, which some players it doesn't come and go because it never comes. Gigi can get off threes pretty easily. It's a question of getting consistency with it. But he was making his threes last night. He was really he's gotten a lot stronger. There was another thing he talked about I didn't use where he said, you know, that guy, what was his name? Johnson, he was talking about Keldon Johnson. He felt it. like when he drove down the lane and sort of went chest to chest with him. He talked about how much stronger he's gotten and you can see that in some of the straight line attacks. So this is a guy who can shoot the three. He can make plays above the rim, which it's good to have guys around Ja Morant who can make plays above the rim, because Ja Morant can set you up if you can get there. But he also, in this offense that's so predicated on driving now, he can be a force with just straight driving to the basket with his combination of strength and athleticism. You know, the defense is coming along. You know, the playmaking is not, he's not much of a passer playmaker. You know, Jaren Jackson's in year 7. He's still not that, you know, he's gotten better at it. But, like, you know, players aren't perfect. Every player, the best players in the world have things they're not great at.
So the other pairing that chiefly Ja Drew wrote about was Ja and Jaren. I don't know, like maybe it was overblown, the sort of how is Ja going to adjust to Jaren being the best player on the team or the man or whatever. But it is clearly true that for the Grizzlies to be at their best, those two have to be at their best and have to be at the best together. You could tell from the beginning last night, Ja was crackling.
Yeah, no, I thought that was one of the better games Ja's played. I mean, we talked a few days ago about that game, like early in the season against Milwaukee that he'd had, where he sort of controlled the game. Last night he had 25 points and 11 assists. That's the first game since that Milwaukee game in October where he hit both of those marks in the same game, where he reached 25 points and 11 assists on the same night. And the balance of playmaking and scoring, but also the balance and kinds of scoring. Obviously, he shot the ball well from 3-2, which is not going to happen every night. He was 4-6. But he was also getting into the lane, hitting floaters, getting into the lane, setting up Zach Edey for buckets, that stuff coming off some high pick and roll. And this is something I've been talking about for a while, that I thought it needed to come into the offense more. I thought it was going to come into the offense more. I have seen signs of them sprinkling it in a little bit more over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I do think that this past week of Morant with the bad game against New York and then the absences, my suspicion is that spurred a little more focus on getting him going in that context. Taylor Jenkins last week, the day after that Knicks game, when they actually had a practice, a rare practice, this is before Morant apparently had the injury and was declared out, he was asked about this, and Taylor Jenkins said, yeah, I asked about Ja's effectiveness and his engagement in the offense. This was a story before he missed that game. And Taylor Jenkins said that day, like, it's on me to get him jump started. And we worked on some stuff in practice to sort of along those lines. And I think what you saw, then Ja missed the next two games. But here in this first game back since that moment, I think you saw a little bit of a reflection of that focus that they had on getting him going.
And it's good for Ja, and it's good for Zach Edey as well, right?
Yeah, totally. And it's good for the team. Like, you know, the Grizzlies have been winning, and the Grizzlies have been having a great offense. But, I mean, this is the thing. Like, a phrase you hear sometimes, and I say it sometimes about NBA basketball, is the regular season is a laboratory. And I think that's generally true, and I think Taylor Jenkins treats it that way in particular. And I think for this Grizzlies team, which has aspirations beyond just making the playoffs, that's especially true. And what that means is that it's not just a matter of, like, winning enough games across 82. It's a matter of growing and evolving your team in a way that you can be the best version of yourself when you get there. And along the way, that'll mean that there'll be games where you lose And, like, good things happen in those losses that are notable. And there'll be games where you're winning, but there's some things in there you see that, like, you need to improve on, you need to work on, that's not quite what you want it to be. And so I think sometimes, given the emotions of fandom, it tends to be a thing where when they lose, everything's bad, and when they win, everything's good. But sometimes when you lose, there's good stuff, and when you win, there's bad stuff. And I think this is a thing, even amid the winning and the successful team offense, they have needed to get that back into the mix to maximize Morant, to maximize Edie, and to give themselves more diversity as they head into the postseason. I think they recognize that, and it's something they've been working on.
Well, to that point then, even plays that do not result in baskets can 100%. Also have some good, can also have some good stuff. And you highlighted another not quite highlight from last night.
Another not quite highlight, which you know, in my world will not be denied entry to the kingdom of highlight posterity. That's John Morant coming down the middle of the floor, not coming from the sides, coming down the straight down the middle of the floor, and just deciding on the fly, I'm going to jump up and do a 180 degree layup with the defender right in front of me. He did not make it, but the effort was noted and deeply appreciated.
All right, and then in addition to the win, in addition to now you're a game and a half up on Houston, you've won 9 of 10. You're the fourth best record in the NBA. And lo and behold, over on the injury report.
I like the Hubie Brown Marcus, second person thing you got going on.
Marcus I'm Smart. With yeah, thank you. Marcus Smart. He's about to do his last game,
that's
Chris,
right.
His ceremonial last
it's a tribute.
Game. So. A tribute. Marcus Smart and Vince both upgraded to doubtful.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, the trade deadline is like 2 days away. They got one game between now and the deadline, and we were hoping all season, are you going to get to see Vince Williams and Marcus Smart before the deadline? And, like, maybe you might see them for one game, like a few hours before the deadline. Maybe not. The Marcus Smart thing is interesting. I don't know, man. Like, is he going to play another game with the Grizzlies or not? I think that's a jump ball that is up in the air.
It is kind of, I mean, it's nice they're going to be back if they're going to be back, if whatever. It's right. Kind of tragic that we don't, like, you would have liked 2 weeks to have seen this or a month to have seen this to see what it looks like. The Marcus Smart illusion there is that he might be dealt, obviously. You think one of the real questions coming up on trade deadline is whether Marcus Smart will remain a Grizz?
Yeah, because there are multiple ways in which he could get dealt. There are the ways in which, like, you know, you're making a significant trade and his contract needs to be there to match it. Like the stuff we've been talking about for, it seems like, years. You know, the Jimmy Butler trade, a Cam Johnson trade, or, like, whatever, right? Those trades probably include Marcus Smart. And one of those would definitely include Marcus Smart. The other one would probably include Marcus Smart. But anything that's bringing back someone with a meaningful salary, Marcus Smart's probably going out in that trade. But there's also the thing, and I wrote the most recent trade deadline preview, I think, over the weekend it published, and I threw out there something I'd been thinking about but I hadn't written about, which I call the Marcus Smart escape hatch trades. Have the Grizzlies reached the point where they've given up on the idea that he's really going to help them and they're just looking to get off the money or to flip him for someone who will play basketball? I don't know that that's where they're at. I'm not saying they are, but they could be. And so it wouldn't shock me if you saw something like that this week.
What does an escape hatch trade look like?
To me, that is, we are trading you Marcus Smart in our 2025 first, which we value, but, like, not that much. What could you give us that will be on our books for less money next season, and that hopefully, like, can actually play basketball for us right now? So, like, I threw out half a dozen of these, but it could be, like, for Bruce Brown, who plays for Toronto, is on an expiring contract. He's had injury issues, but he's back and he's playing. This is a guy who was the sixth man on the Nuggets title team 2 years ago. Is that a guy who could help you in the playoffs and then his contract disappears this summer and you clear $20 million from your books? There are variations of that kind of thing.
This particular column, which I don't think we discussed because I think it actually dropped late Friday.
Yeah, it was over the weekend.
It's where you'd mentioned your Andrew Wiggins.
I did that.
Imagined it was there. Larry Nance Jr. popped up in this.
That's the guy I've been thinking about since last summer with the Grizzlies, honestly. When he got traded to Atlanta, he was sort of a throw-in in that deal, that DeJounte Murray deal. And that was a guy I sort of wondered about since last summer. I had sort of put front court guys out of my mind because the Grizzlies front court has been working. But I do look at it and I think, okay, Zach Edey's a rookie. Jay Huff does not really have experience and is more not a particularly physical player. Would it be useful to have a veteran center who can, like, get rebounds and set picks and play defense and just be a physical player in a playoff series, you might have a need for that, you know. And if you can get someone like that who comes cheap enough, I think that might be a useful thing to have. And Nance is a guy. Now, I sort of revisited Atlanta once Jalen Johnson, their second best player, went out for the season with an injury. So there are guys who I thought about with Atlanta, like Larry Nance and DeAndre Hunter. I just assume Atlanta's not selling, but now I think maybe they are.
DeAndre Hunter was another one who popped into that column. Maybe we'll talk about him tomorrow. But the Larry Nance thing, what would a deal like that look like?
I think it would be – I don't think you would send your first-round pick. I think it would be, you know, contract match and a second-round pick. Right. It'd be a small thing, like you know. That. Yeah.
And have you heard anything in your readings, whatever, things popping up about the Grizzlies that intrigue you in the last 24 hours?
I mean, there was something – at this point, there's so much stuff I can't remember. But there was something – maybe it was The Athletic. Maybe you mentioned it yesterday. There was something that basically said the Grizzlies have never really made an offer for Jimmy Butler, yep. which is sort of what I've been saying the whole time. But, right. like, there's some confirmation if you needed it there. Tim Bontemps had a note about, you know, Marcus Smart being a guy to watch. And again, that's sort of the way I feel, too. Right. But he's obviously hearing something as well that could be a guy to keep an eye on.
You can read Chris's piece on Gigi and Ja over at the Daily Memphian, and Drew's piece on Ja and Jaren, and of course Drew's continuing series on Jaren, the most interesting man in sports, over at the Daily Memphian as well. Thanks very much, Chris. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks,
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. We're going to take a break. Come back and talk to our man in Washington D.C., Charles Fishman. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. Charles is the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for business writing and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He joins me now. And with all that is happening in the world, and across this great country of ours, he wants to start by talking about Applebee's?
I hope listeners remember, because we did talk about this last year. Applebee's, which has 1,529 restaurants in the U.S., that's a lot of restaurants, a lot of Applebee's, offered this date night pass. Last year, 2024 and 2023, were really bad in the kind of casual restaurant business.
Applebee's, Chili's, that kind of place, yeah.
Right.
TGI Fridays, right.
P.F. Chang's, a bunch of those chains, they didn't go out of business, but they filed for bankruptcy. People scaled down, right? They went from sitting in a restaurant where you have to tip and all of that to take out, or just, hey, the Fishman method, cook at home.
Yeah.
Applebee's offered a date night pass a year ago, and we talked about it. And you could spend $200 to get $1,500 in Applebee's food. They did it as you got a $30 discount on your check once a week for 52 weeks. So it's actually $1,560. You had to spend $200, and then you could get $1,560 off if you used it 52 times in a year. But you only needed, in point of fact, you only needed to use it 7 times to get your money back. So that's not even once a month. So the question is, how much Applebee's could you eat? Well, last year, the Wall Street Journal wrote about the pass, and they featured a family from North Dakota, from Fargo, North Dakota, Emily and Bill Brooks, and their 2 teenage children. She went online. She was ready. The gold Applebee's passes sold out in less than 60 seconds last year. She got one.
Goodness.
Yesterday, well, whatever, today's paper, overnight, they went back to the Brooks family to see how they used their pass. And Emily, the mom, drove the family used the pass. And apparently heading into December, the pass went through the end of January. So December and January, last 2 months, they'd only used about 35 of their meals. And she said, we are going to use every one of these. And so in December and January, they went to Applebee's 2 and 3 times a week to use it up. And it's just a hysterical story. I will I will give
so
it
So they ate
to,
at the, they ate at Applebee's 52 times.
They ate, and that's the headline of the story, is one family discovered what it's like to eat at Applebee's 52 times in a year. The opening scene is her accounting for what they did in December and January. They bought 16 orders of loaded garlic mashed potatoes, 5 cheeseburgers, 5 brew up pretzels and cheese. The loaded garlic mashed potatoes come with mashed potatoes, of course, sour cream, bacon bits, cheese.
Sounds spectacular. I would enjoy, I wouldn't choose to go every week, but if someone gave me free Applebee's every week, I would happily eat
I would test it out. I can't remember
the last time I ate at an Applebee's, though.
Right. Well, there's an Applebee's 8 miles from your house. There's 3 in the Memphis area. There's a bunch in the Washington, D.C. area, but they're all in the suburbs.
Near you.
The nearest Applebee's to mine is 9 miles. I would, I have eaten at Applebee's, especially when I was a reporter. The most interesting, two little interesting things. There's a picture of them at their second to last, their 51st meal. They went to their Fargo restaurant where they are celebrities. And she wore a bright red party dress, Emily, and her husband wore a tuxedo. And he lost 50 pounds between August and January, even though they were eating at Applebee's. He lost 50 pounds.
What do you mean, even though? I think it's the Applebee's weight loss program. What do you mean, even?
It's the Applebee's weight loss program. He substituted broccoli for French fries, which I got to say takes a lot of discipline. Just to wrap this up, Applebee's is doing it again. Emily Brooks says she's going to try again. The card has changed a little bit, and now, in some ways, it's slightly more appealing. You pay $100 instead of $200, and you get $50 off your check, which means, really, you can eat a meal. I think it's hard for two people to eat a meal for $30 with tip, right? But for $50, you could do it, and you only get it once a month. So you spend $100, and you get $600 in value. But you only have to go twice or three times to get your money back. But they're going to be limited. They said there's only 3,000. So if you go to Applebee's. So
Aaliyah, Jeffrey's wife, was particularly interested in tuning in to Fish on Friday on Tuesday today, not to hear about Applebee's, but to hear about tariffs. Now, as you know, given that I try to be right down the middle on this show, I'm wary of discussing tariffs, although I have to say that whether commentators from the right and the left, and from the right, I refer to the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which called it the dumbest trade war ever, have tended to be skeptical about these tariffs. They've now been paused with Canada and Mexico. The Chinese one has not been paused. What do you want to say about
today, the Wall Street Journal had this to say about Mexico and Canada and the tariffs being paused. This is the Wall Street Journal. Trump blinks on North American tariffs. He does never admit he's wrong, but he often changes his mind. Anyway, what is there? There's so many things to say. Aaliyah wanted to know if it was going to happen and if it was going to work. Look, over the weekend and yesterday, here's what I was thinking about. 24% of the cars sold in the U.S. at dealerships in the U.S., one in four cars sold in the U.S. are made in Canada or Mexico, brought across on trains and sold here. But much more dramatic, this is just cars. The tariffs are on everything. 54% of the parts that go into our cars come from Mexico or Canada. We've done this on purpose. We have integrated our markets. They're good at making parts. We're good at assembling the cars. We're good at designing the cars. They're good at the logistics, that kind of thing. And a typical car has 30,000 parts. 30,000 parts. So over the weekend, Friday, maybe even back to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, thousands of people at Ford and GM and Toyota and Honda their heads were exploding. Okay, where do I get those window gaskets? Where do I get those electrical harnesses? Where do I get those headlight assemblies? How many do I have to make Jeep Wagoneers or Ford F-150s? How do I keep that plant running? even if 29,999 parts are in the car, if you don't have any headlights, you can't sell the car. And so famously, during the pandemic, Toyota ran out of automated keys, and they only gave you one key for your car, and people were furious. And so all weekend long, planners and logisticians at the car companies were probably working 18 hours a day trying to figure out how to keep the factories running here in the U.S. What was interesting was Canada and Mexico are not stupid, right? So Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, had announced what he was going to do. Their trade, what they buy from us is smaller than what we buy from them, but they had specifically picked out important products in red states. They tariffed Kentucky bourbon. They tariffed oranges from Florida. Now, those tariffs didn't go into effect. They ordered all liquor, made all wine, beer, and spirits made in the U.S., taken off the shelves of Canadian groceries. Canada's about the size and economy of California. It's the largest market for our beer, wine, and spirits. So they weren't just going to do blanket tariffs. They were going to do tariffs to impose pain. All postponed. And look, in point of fact, there are problems that need to be solved. It's not clear that the way to tackle fentanyl or the way to tackle the border is with tariffs. Those two things are substantively unrelated. But President Trump got some things he wanted. Among other things, he got attention to these problems from Sheinbaum in Mexico and Trudeau in Canada. And he caused the chaos, and then he resolved the chaos yesterday.
I'll be honest, I'm having a little bit of a hard time sorting out whether he achieved anything substantive. In other words, and this is so much depending on where you consume your news. Like I literally have a guy emailing me saying the 10,000 troops had already been announced that the 10,000 troops were going to be there. Trump got nothing. And then other people say, no, Trump got these things from Canada and from Mexico. I'm having a hard time sorting out. I don't think anyone is asserting, except for maybe Trump himself, that these were major substantive victories as opposed to symbolic victories. I mean, as we point out, the very right-wing Wall Street Journal editorial says that it was Trump who blinked. And in the meantime, the best thing about this seems to be that they've gone away, that they've gone on pause. Like no one seems to want them, right? So the best thing about it is,
We've organized the economy to be integrated. But hang on a second. Let's take one thing substantively, and that's fentanyl. Fentanyl is a disaster. During the previous Trump administration, he really pushed the Chinese hard to stop shipping fentanyl to the United States, illegal fentanyl. Some people listening, I've had fentanyl in an operating room. Like fentanyl is a medicine, but illegal fentanyl is mixed into all kinds of drugs now, and it kills people. It kills Americans, 90,000 a year. And he was successful. The Chinese, who completely control their economy down to every element, were able to stop the illegal export of fentanyl. But what happened is the chemical components of the fentanyl are now what Chinese criminals export, and they send them to Mexico. And in Mexico, they take those components. They're called, quote unquote, precursors. I don't know why they call them that. It's just the ingredients to mix up and make fentanyl. And then the Mexicans make the fentanyl and send it across the border. So the degree to which, I mean, the Chinese could presumably clamp down on the precursors in exactly the way they clamp down on fentanyl itself. And there'd be nothing wrong with stopping the flow of fentanyl into the United States. The one thing I would say is we've been fighting the drug war for 30 years, partnered with Mexico. Mexico doesn't want their country overrun by the cartels and the cartels controlling whole districts of the country. That's not good for them. It's not good for us. We do need to figure out how to tamp down our own demand. The reason they sell drugs in the U.S. is because we buy drugs. And so there's a whole separate conversation.
You know, I got an idea. I got an idea.
Go for it.
Just say no. Just say no. I'm going to put this on bumper stickers. I'm going to fix it, man. Just say no. I get it. But
let's talk about the China tariffs for a minute.
I was going to ask you in specific, because those ones are still going
into effect at 12:01. There was a lot of conversation yesterday between Canada and the White House, Mexico and the White House. China seemed a little calmer. And the 10% tariffs on every single thing. Think about what we bring in from China. We bring in finished cars. 85% of iPhones in the world are made in China. Your iPhone, if you have one, was made in China. Plus, 80% of toys sold in U.S. stores come from China. You know, something like 40% of apparel. So right this minute, if you're listening to this show, something on your body or within arm's reach came from China. 10% tariff on everything, just even collecting that, stopping the flow of goods to collect the tariff. You got to know the value to make the 10%. The Chinese, quote unquote, retaliated this morning, but in a really interesting way. They put 15% tariffs on all U.S. coal, natural gas, large agricultural machinery like tractors and combines, SUVs, pickup trucks. So that's a very small slice of what we sell to China.
And so what's interesting about that? Why those things?
What's interesting is they're being calm. And those tariffs don't even take effect for a week until February 10th, for 6 days. So they're clearly in, and today the White House has announced that President Trump will speak with quote-unquote Chinese officials. It's not clear whether he'll speak directly with Xi Jinping, but President Xi, but he's gonna have the same kind of conversations he had yesterday. Do we know what they want from China?
In other words, with Mexico, it was fentanyl and it was, you know, immigration. Do we know what they're asking in exchange for these?
They want the fentanyl thing tackled. The interesting thing is Trump negotiated what he called at the time, this is going to stun you, this is what he called it, the best trade deal of any kind in history with China, in which they agreed, among other things, to buy $200 million worth of farm goods from us, and they never did it. They agreed to do it and then never did it. And so there's talk that they will revisit that 2020 agreement and make sure that that China actually does it this time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. The impact, the fentanyl impact, could be greater. I don't think we're going to see 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico going forward starting March 1st. I think they're going to figure out a way. And Trump likes to cause the problem and then solve the problem. And that's sort of where the value is for him.
And the good news is at least the price of eggs is down.
Yeah, boy, the price of eggs, if you want an inflation hangover,
yeah, by the way, I'm not blaming Trump for it. I think it just shows that inflation isn't necessarily in control of the president. The price of eggs, we have news from Waffle House. What's the Waffle House angle?
Right. I mean, that's where the price of eggs is coming to bear. Waffle House announced yesterday, let's give you credit. You're the source of this information. Waffle House announced yesterday that they are adding a 50% per egg surcharge. That's a lot, actually. I didn't look it up, but Waffle House is a place where a cider or scrambled eggs cost $2.99, right? So if they're adding a 50 cent per egg surcharge, your $2.99 eggs become $3.99. And they posted a sign in every Waffle House that says, unfortunately, we have to charge you. The price of eggs is so high for us, we have to charge you 50 cents an egg more. But we're doing it as a surcharge because as soon as the price of eggs comes down, we're going to take it off. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. The price of eggs is high because of bird flu. Bird flu is decimating chicken flocks in America, both the meat side and the egg side. When a flock gets bird flu, you have to kill the whole flock. And so 100 in the last year, year and a half, 100 million chickens that lay eggs have been killed. That's going to reduce the supply of eggs. That's 100 million eggs a day or so, one egg per chicken per day. So you're going to see
how many. And your typical Waffle House omelet, how many you have to pay a buck extra, or is it a three-egg omelet? You have to pay $1.50. It's a three-egg omelet, Jeffrey. Jeffrey's our Waffle House expert. It's a three-egg omelet.
Right. Yeah. Waffle House is one of those places where at 5 o'clock in the morning, somebody cracks 100 eggs into a stainless steel bowl, and then every 2 hours they do it, and they just dip. You know, they just dip in there. But yeah, it's a three-egg omelet, and two. I 50 cents per egg is a lot, but a dollar added onto your Waffle House check. I hope they don't take it out of you. I hope you don't take it out of the tip.
There's anti-inflationary
news. The Super Bowl is the opposite, a huge inflation buster. Did you know this news?
I didn't know this.
Super Bowl tickets are both plunging in real time. The cheapest ticket is now under $4,000, which really has me tempted to go, right? Get two tickets, head off to New Orleans for $8,000. I wouldn't even go see Taylor Swift, and I love Taylor Swift. The cheapest ticket is now below $4,000 on the secondary market. That's down from $5,500 a week ago. So ticket prices are dropping as the event gets closer. Pretty unusual for the Super Bowl. It's 50% cheaper than the tickets were at this time last year. And you can guess why. Just take a guess. Why do you think?
Because people hate Patrick Mahomes.
And they wanted
the Bills to be in the Super Bowl, and they're frustrated that we have to live with freaking Patrick Mahomes again. It's depressing. And the Taylor Swift angle, it's all nauseating. Why? New Orleans? I don't know. Why?
That's the theory. The theory is that the reason ticket prices are down. Nobody mentions Patrick Mahomes specifically, who's kind of charming.
Of course not.
But another Super Bowl with Kansas City Chiefs, I'm going to regret this, but what is the actual chance the Philadelphia Eagles will beat the Kansas City Chiefs?
That's 50-50.
There's some chance.
There's a reason. Jeffrey, what's the line?
1.5.
Jeffrey, 1.5. It's
about a 48% chance. Yeah, 49.
It's a coin flip game. We have another item on your list, credit card interest rate limit. What's that?
Yeah, this is really interesting. I think this is a place where America really can come together. On the campaign trail, I think this was one of these like no taxes on tips and no taxes on overtime, an idea that just kind of popped into the head of President Trump. He said he wanted to limit credit card interest rates to 10%. Current credit card interest rates on average, 21.5%. Bernie Sanders and Josh Hawley, the most unlikely couple in history, have introduced a bill this morning to do exactly that. The only people who oppose limiting credit card interest to 10% are the banks.
The credit card companies. Yeah.
We will see who wins. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy your tariff-free avocados. Buy a car this week. You never know.
Thank you, Charles. You never know. Thanks very much, Charles. That's Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. He's on Twitter or X at C Fishman. All right, Jeffrey. What's coming up next on 92.9 FM ESPN?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson and Jason Fitz join their program today. Tim Murray's going to rejoin the program on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Ah, Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, bootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.